welcome to Kevin JJ's Movie Mania Podcast, where Kevin and JJ discuss everything and anything they can about the movies they love and sometimes about the movies they hate. This is episode 3, and this week JJ and I will be discussing Marvel's new movie, The Guardians of the Galaxy. And there's a lot to talk about, and I think it might take a while, so sit back and relax. Okay, so that was Come and Get Your Love by Redbone from 1974, and that's where we meet Chris Pratt's Jason Quill, or Star-Lord, in the new Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a pretty fun-filled opening. It's very funny, and it's a great introduction to the character, and JJ's here with me.
Yep, hello. I can't wait to discuss this movie.
Yeah,
because I definitely enjoyed it a lot. Though I get the impression that you may have enjoyed it a little bit more than me, but we'll dive all into that.
Yeah, I probably did. This is a real, real geek movie, you know, for those people following the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
And I would even venture to say it could be as good or even better than The Avengers.
Okay.
Simply because it's well contained within itself. Like, you didn't have to see anything else in the Marvel Universe to enjoy this movie, yet it fits perfectly into it.
That's very true.
And it's so lighthearted, and its spirit is so, like, whimsical and funny. It's just that much easier to have affection for, I think, than the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Avengers movie.
Yeah, that's another movie that I really enjoyed. Probably not as much as you, but I really enjoyed it. And the Avengers, you're totally right. You could totally sit down and watch that and not really know, you know, some of the backstories of these characters that we've come to love from the previous Marvel movies. It's just a great adventure flick, and I do know what you mean with Guardians of the Galaxy. It's brand new characters that no other moviegoers have seen yet. You know, it's not Iron Man 4 or Thor 3 or, you know, I found that very refreshing too. And you're right, the story is self-contained, and even though it is like an origin story, of course, it's unique enough, it's fresh enough, as you mentioned, and the characters are so quirky and offbeat that, you know, it's an enjoyable ride. There's really no other way to say it.
Yeah, and not only have we not, been introduced to these characters before, well, as you said, they're brand new characters.
To moviegoers,
Moviegoers, yeah, there's absolutely no, they don't have any built-in fan base. I mean, right. You know, 49 out of 50 moviegoers have no idea who Star-Lord is, who Rocket Raccoon is.
Like
yada,
me.
Yada, yada. But, yeah, exactly. And on that note, I might as well introduce, you know, all five of our main characters, but instead of boring you with our voices, I'll let John C. Reilly do it as he does in the trailer.
Take it away, John.
We arrested these five on Xandar. Check out the rap sheets.
Drax,
a.k.a. the Destroyer. Since his wife and family were killed, he's been on a rampage across the galaxy in his search for vengeance. Gamora, soldier, assassin, wanted on over a dozen counts of murder. Rocket, wanted on over 50 charges of vehicular theft and escape from lockup.
What the hell?
Groot, he's been traveling recently as Rocket's personal houseplant slash muscle.
Peter Jason Quill. He's also known as Star-Lord.
Who calls him that?
Himself, mostly. He's wanted largely on charges of minor assault, public intoxication, and fraud.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know how this machine worked.
All right, so those are our five main characters. So pretty much, you know, to make a really quick rifling through the plot...
Yes.
Star-Lord, or Peter Quill, he is from Earth. He was taken from Earth when he was a young boy after a tragedy. And we meet him in the middle of a Raiders of the Lost Ark scene where he's trying to acquire some mystical steel orb. It's pretty much the MacGuffin of the movie. Nobody knows what it is or what it does. But what we do know is that pretty much everyone wants it.
Yeah.
Star-Lord works for head of a bounty hunter legion named Yondu. That's played by Michael Rooker.
Yes.
And as I said before, Star-Lord is played by Chris Pratt, but we'll discuss that later.
Yes.
So Yondu wants to get this from Star-Lord because Star-Lord double-crossed him. And then the big baddies of this part of the Marvel Universe, which are Thanos, which we had seen in the closing credits of the Avengers, and his underling, Ronan the Accuser, played by Lee Pace, they also want this orb, so they dispatch Gamora, played by Zoe Saldana, to track it down. On top of that, there's a bounty on the head of Star-Lord from Yondu. So Rocket Raccoon, voiced by Bradley Cooper, and Groot, a walking, talking, living tree, voiced by Vin Diesel, they get a whiff of this bounty on him, so they go after him as well.
So the adventure takes them to the planet Xandar, which contains the headquarters of the Nova Corps. And eventually, our four characters, Peter Quill, or Star-Lord, Gamora, Rocket the Raccoon, and Groot, are arrested and imprisoned. While there, they meet up with Drax the Destroyer, played by Dave Bautista, and hijinks ensue.
Yeah, I think that's about all the plot we have to do, because the story just traipse all over the place in all different settings and all different planets and ships and all that kind of stuff. So I guess we'll just leave that for you to be discovered.
Exactly. There's really not much more that needs to be said, which is why it's an enjoyable ride.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no way you can know what's going to happen next, because it's so... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the ultimate in the Marvel Universe of being silly. I mean, it is a silly, silly movie.
Yeah, with the exception of the opening scene on Earth.
Absolutely.
Which is...
But we'll keep
very...
we'll keep this spoiler free, but...
Yeah, well, yeah, we'll keep it... We'll just say it's very poignant. And
heart-wrenching,
really,
I would say.
yeah. I guess I'll go, yeah.
Almost more so than anything else we've seen in the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of juxtaposes the rest of the movie, but it kind of puts that really important, you know, foundation underneath how, you know, ridiculous everything else is.
Yeah, you're right. It is a good juxtaposition. Without that first scene on Earth, it may have been like an overkill of the silly factor. So I'm glad it had that, you know, that setup of gravity before we get to the fun silliness.
Right. If the that opening scene with Star-Lord was the absolute opening scene to the whole movie, and we didn't have that, you know, poignant scene that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The whole movie would feel strange.
I agree. It would be strange. For me, that opening scene was just an excellent setup, superbly executed, and then how it just kind of falls straight into the silly nature with, you know, seeing adult Peter Quill now as in like a very Raiders of the Lost Ark-ish sequence where, like you mentioned before, he's looking for this mysterious orb and he's listening to this cassette tape he has from when he was probably like 8 years old.
Right.
From the 1980s. I mean, the 1970s. And it's just so fun. I mean, these silly little dance moves he does and, you know, these little monsters pop up. And it's hard to explain. It's just so... It's like it made me giddy watching it.
Right, like you know you're in for a fun time already.
Yes.
And director...
I was just going to say, we should mention the director.
Right, it's James Gunn.
Yes.
And his choice of this, you know, Sony Walkman cassette tape that Peter Quill cherishes... is such a brilliant plot device to bring these 70s songs into this ridiculous space epic.
Realm, right, right.
And not a single time that they played a 70s song did it feel out of place or
nope.
Forced. It was so well handled.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
And just for those who, you know, aren't sure, director James Gunn, he's a relative rookie director. He did a superhero movie called Super in 2010, a really equally silly horror movie called Slither in 2006, but other than that, it's nothing too, you know...
Well, you can't not mention that he didn't direct Movie 43, which was viewed by many as the worst movie of the year of 2013, but...
That's true, but... In his defense, he only did one segment of probably 15 different segments of that movie. So he's only 1/15, you know.
That's true. Very
culpable
true. Very
for
true.
That movie.
Okay.
So I guess we should go through actors and characters. And I mean, you have to first talk about Chris Pratt, who is as good at playing Peter Quill as I think Robert Downey Jr. is playing Iron Man.
I wouldn't go that far, but he definitely makes for a great, you know, hero, a great protagonist for this movie. I can't really envision anyone else right now.
Right.
Who could kind of handle that, like, that likability and, you know, kind of the goofiness, the dance moves, the tongue-in-cheek. And
just... like down to earth realism.
Yes, yes.
He absolutely grounds this movie in every scene he's in.
Yes.
I mean, when he's standing there talking next to a computer generated talking tree, you kind of buy it because his presence is so believable and so, like you said, likable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was done like more wooden or, you know, without so much charisma, the whole would have just crumbled under absurdity.
He balances the bravado with, like, the wisecracky humor.
Exactly. Yeah,
I mean,
no, I thought
he was
absolutely the perfect choice to play him.
Yeah, and he's having a big year because he already was in... He was the voice of Emmett in the Lego Movie,
right,
which came out earlier this year, and it was a huge hit. And just looking back at his filmography a couple of years, it's kind of stunning how many like quality movies he was a part of. He was in Moneyball.
Yep.
He was in Her last year, the Joaquin Phoenix movie. And now the Lego Movie and this, he's definitely on a roll at
and
age.
And everyone loves him on Park and Rec and on
yes.
Parks and Recreation.
Of course, I've never seen it myself, but I know that he's very popular from that.
Right.
And I know a lot of TV fans are kind of hoping that he'll cross over and, you know, become like a big Hollywood star. And I definitely think he'll be, you know, very well noticed from this this franchise. So.
Right. The other person that I think just, I mean, most of the other performances are pretty standard. There's nothing too extravagant about it. Especially Zoe Saldana as Gamora. One, as the comic fan among the two of us. Gamora is supposed to be much more ruthless than she comes across.
What she comes across as to me, not knowing that she's supposed to be ruthless.
Right.
To me, she came across as kind of inwardly tortured.
Yes, and that's fine.
That's fine.
But she, in the comic, she is a, if you, you know, smirk at her, she'll cut your head off. Kind of ruthless.
Okay.
Which I felt was done well with Karen Gillan as Nebula.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Oh, yeah, you were scared. I was scared as shit of her.
Yeah, Nebula was a force to be reckoned with. And when the fight, you know, between Gamora and Nebula, you know, showed up, it was, I don't believe for a second that Gamora could beat her. Not for a second.
Yeah.
So, I don't think Gamora was handled properly. It might not be all completely her fault. Zoe Saldana's fault.
Especially since, because the movie is so goofy and it feels like it would have just let loose with a fun, ruthless female heroine.
Right.
The fact that they did kind of subdue her.
I think they wanted
really
make to make her likable.
Yeah.
But when you contrast that with the other person I was impressed with, which was Dave Bautista.
Yes.
Who, same thing, Drax in the comics is a very loose cannon, dangerous person.
You definitely get that impression.
Right. And Bautista, who before this was just known as a wrestler, pretty much. Perfect. Like, he was so pitch perfect with his small comic deliveries and his, you know, his brooding presence. And it just, he definitely worked.
Well, I think it's just, he just made me laugh probably more than any of them, because he's this big, hulking brute who, you know, the kind of like the running theme or the running motif with his character is that he doesn't get the concept of metaphors.
Right.
And it's just so funny every time he's taking everything literal-minded.
You know, it's a very fun thing.
Yeah.
On the other thing, I think I'd mention Bradley Cooper does voice Rocket very, very well.
Oh, yeah. He was probably... He was great in that you didn't know it was Bradley Cooper's voice.
I think
by now we all know basically what he sounds like, and he put forth quite an effort to create a very, you know, cartoonish. I don't mean it in the aspect of like for children, but he definitely made Rocket the Raccoon have a distinct vocal personality that was unlike his.
Right, and it's. I think it was a good thing. It's that his voice, his name on the poster, brings, you know, popularity to it.
Well, that brings me to Vin Diesel.
Well, right. But I was going to say the recognition of his voice isn't there.
It wasn't going to be a draw, no.
It's not like, you know, every time. It's not like it's Bradley Cooper as a raccoon. It's a raccoon that Bradley Cooper provided a voice for, not even his voice.
Correct.
So I think that worked very well.
When I mentioned Vin Diesel kind of fleetingly before, I just meant that, you know, he plays Groot, the talking tree human hybrid thing. Very, very Ent-like, you know, from Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great character, and you know, the funny thing with him is that Groot only says, "I am Groot."
Right.
And while that was funny the first couple of times, I felt like it kind of wore out its welcome eventually. But not even getting to that, there's no way you could humanly possible pick that's Vin Diesel's voice. It could have been my voice that they altered. Just attaching the name Vin Diesel, again, I feel like it was a marketing ploy. Like, oh, let's get Vin Diesel in this movie and flash his name up on the trailer. And people will say, oh, Vin Diesel, Fast and Furious, love that. I'm going to come to the theater and see Vin Diesel. And you never see him and you never hear him.
Right. I mean, it almost would have made more sense to have Bradley Cooper voice both of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would have
been an interesting talking point, too.
Right. I think that would have went further marketing-wise.
Yes.
And Bradley Cooper as both Rocket Raccoon and Groot, because it being Vin Diesel makes no difference.
No.
Because it is Vin Diesel's voice, but they definitely modulate it in ways to make it sound alien.
Yeah.
So, but, however, that does not, I think the I am Groot idea is pretty funny.
It's funny. I laughed, and the way that Groot says it, he's so sweet. I mean, he's this tall, ominous looking tree creature that, you know, just, he self regenerates. He can bash through anyone and anything. He's like a scary presence, and yet they've animated or CGI'd his face to such a way that he looks so sweet when he talks. And when he says, "I am Groot," he's, you know, it's adorable. I hate to use that word. It sounds, you know, but I, just by the seventh or eighth time he said it, I was kind of over it. But it's just a nitpick.
But I heard a comparison to Star Wars in a way that it's of like the Han and Chewie dynamic, how
yes.
Chewie just makes a growl and Han knows exactly what he's talking about.
Same thing
with, you know, Groot says, "I am Groot," and mm-hmm. Rocket knows exactly what he's saying, like it was a full sentence. And I did like that dynamic there. It didn't really get old.
Okay.
But, however.
Yeah, and you know, these are all knee-jerk. You know, I'm going to see this movie again and again eventually, and,
yes.
You know, I may slide right into it, you know, just fine. And you're right, it's funny, a lot of people have kind of correlated this movie to Star Wars with the whole ragtag team in the galaxy and just the quirky characters, the witty humor, how goofball it all is.
Right. Well, I think this raised a very, very, very high bar for Episode 7 of Star Wars for next year. And
absolutely.
I was thinking that during the dogfight scenes in the ships. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, watching the ships chasing each other and shooting and dodging and all that kind of stuff, it was mm-hmm. so well done and well staged and well realized. I was like, it's going to be a problem because next year when the new Star Wars comes out, they're going to have space dogfights in it like every single Star Wars movie has.
Yes.
And if they're not done perfectly, it's the comparison to this movie is going to be there, like it was done better in the stupid Marvel movie.
Right.
So, but
yeah,
I do have
point.
To say, the effects and the action stuff like that were absolutely firing on all cylinders.
I thought that the effects were good. I was more impressed, actually, with the actual sets.
Oh, I agree.
I thought that they were really just fascinating to look at. You know, you could watch this on a DVD months from now and hit pause just to basically appreciate the work that it went to all these different, very varied, you know, galaxy-like sets. I thought they were really cool.
A lot of money went into the... you see a lot of money up on screen. That
which I really appreciate because in this day and age where everything is CGI,
right.
I was glad to have seen some actual, you know, actual sets and actual makeup, not CGI makeup, and, you know, very interesting costumes. And yeah, the effects were very good. I'm not going to say they're
right.
not.
But that's secondary, and I agree to the practical look of the movie.
Yeah, which I will always appreciate. So.
Right.
So the two things that are kind of weighing on my mind that kind of prevented me from, you know, outright loving this movie and instead just kind of really liking it was, you just mentioned before, a little bit before, about the dog fights.
Right.
And even though I felt like my money was well spent for getting such like a visual and like sonar blast in my seat.
Oh yeah, it certainly was that.
You know, you're going to hate me for saying this, but I'm sorry. I'm so bored by these kind of never-ending, what the hell is going on now action sequences that tend to riddle the midsections of these Marvel Universe movies. Like, it sounds to you like you were impressed by the dog fights. I absolutely hated them.
Really?
Yes. Like, to me, why put so much effort into creating this fantastic universe only to have this plethora of, like, whiz-bang action sequences where all you see are, like, pixels flying across your screen where I couldn't even appreciate, like, the edits are so quick and the fights tend to get confusing and I just want to sit back and watch a well-staged chase, a well-staged dogfight, and instead I just saw, like, the rainbow of pixels across the screen. That's what I saw.
I can appreciate that. However, you know, to play devil's advocate, you know, when you
and
have...
And that's fine if you have one or two of those in this type of movie. I mean, that's what you want. That's what you kind of salivate for. But I just felt like there was a huge chunk in the middle of the movie, which was definitely my least favorite section of the movie, that seemed to clog up the running time for me with it. And I wasn't wowed, I was getting annoyed.
My thought on it is like, so like, say you have Iron Man and the universe of Iron Man.
Okay.
It's like one person doing one thing and stuff like that. So you're not going to have that kind of escalated CGI work or whatever. But in the world that is created here,
yes,
out in the distant galaxies of whatever with vast amounts of technology and aliens and stuff like that,
yeah,
I feel like it's almost inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
That I agree with you, it can definitely be tiresome.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly agree with you with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost becomes a necessity because...
In a way that
you say doing it almost wastes all the time and effort you used into creating the world,
yeah,
I feel like not doing it is almost a waste of what's the word I'm looking for?
I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's a waste of...
It's like, how can you have
of the
all
story
this
of the world, because that's how this world fights. That's how this mm-hmm. world travels. That's how this world mm-hmm. is structured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in these... Like, even that point where they're chasing around, you know, where the Collector is, mm-hmm. You know, and those... And Star-Lord says something like, you know, these are made for whatever, they're virtually indestructible. That's exactly the point. Like, in this world, they have these transport modules that are almost indestructible, so that's why they were used as a getaway vehicle and used in this dogfight sequence. It almost, like I said, seems like an inevitability. You know
right.
what I'm trying to say?
I definitely do. I definitely.
But I totally agree with you that it can get tiresome and go on too long, and it probably did at some points in this movie. But to not have it would seem like it would be, you would get, like it would be cheaping out.
I don't mean to nitpick. I like action sequences, and I do agree. I think that if they were a little bit shorter, a little bit more focused, I totally get what you're saying, that they're in a galaxy. They're in a galaxy which no one has any idea what the hell the galaxy looks like or what it's capable of or what you're capable of doing in and around or with these type of contraptions and machinery and spacecraft, and I totally get that. I just felt like there was one or two few too many, they went on a little bit too long, and that, like, I'm thinking of, like, the dog chases in, let's say, Minority Report,
right.
from 12 years ago. Those were so focused. There was a lot of whiz-bang stuff going on, but I felt like it was in order. I knew what I was looking at. It still looked otherworldly. I didn't get that with this movie.
No, but I can totally
It's just a nitpick. It just irked me for about 20 minutes in the middle of the movie. That's
right.
That's all I'm saying. And it's just these type of little things that can chip away at me. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But overall, I definitely get it.
Overall, we both pretty much really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Escape is fun.
Oh, that's totally what it is. And don't get me wrong, I have been talking it up to people, friends, families, coworkers. I was saying, oh, you should check out The Guardians of the Galaxy. It's fun. It's escapist. Exactly what you said. So even though I had these issues with it, I still wholeheartedly recommend it to anyone. I recommended it to my coworker last week, and she went with her son, and they had a blast. So, you know.
And I do, before we end, I do have to say, one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie was when Michael Rooker as Yondu fought off that group of people in that field.
Yes, that was very, very cool.
That was very, very cool.
I completely
he probably has the best weapon out of anybody in the Marvel Universe, I think.
That was, yeah. Now, can you refresh my memory? What do I know Michael Rooker from, or do I?
Well, you don't watch The Walking Dead.
No, unfortunately.
Cliffhanger, probably.
Oh, God. Yeah, maybe that's it. Okay.
He was the father in Mallrats. He was...
Okay.
Oh, boy.
You said Cliffhanger.
These days, he's Merle in The Walking Dead. That's pretty much probably why James Gunn chose him. Because, you know, as that character, because they're not the same, but the same kind of tough, rough and tumble personality. Mm-hmm. He could, you know, he pictured him on The Walking Dead, covered him in turquoise paint, and he was like, yeah, that could work.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and TV is getting so big. Like, lately, TV is huge. Can you agree? And I feel like a lot of directors, first timers, or veterans are starting to pull some of these TV stars and putting them into these big movies now, because people will actually know them from the television shows. Like you just mentioned, Walking Dead, huge show, popular show. I'm sure half the theater we saw it in knew him from Walking Dead.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So anyway, again, I really liked it. You know, there was a ton of little plot threads left dangling for ensuing sequels, as these origin stories typically tend to do. So I'll definitely look forward to the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie to come.
Yes, me too. I really enjoyed it.
Clearly. And you know, I'm glad that we could talk it through, and you kind of see where I was coming from.
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely see where you're coming from. It's just the small little things, you know, but I definitely liked it a lot.
All right, we'll leave it at that.
Sounds good.
All right.
Till the next time.
Till the next time.
Bye.
Okay, that's it for episode 3. Of the Kevin JJ Movie Mania podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed. Next week, we'll be tackling another top 5 list, but again, we're already ignoring our own rules. It's not going to be on the spot. We're going to be honoring the late, great Robin Williams with mine and JJ's top 5 favorite performances of his. So, we'll post that when we can. And, if you want, you can visit our website, kevinandjjmovies.weebly.com, and take a look around, see our reviews, see our podcast page, leave us some feedback, whatever you'd like. Hope you enjoyed, and we'll see you next time.